Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're going to play on and stand strong with Trollo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Bump up the volume. It's time to play.
Yeah, we're back. Sweatier than ever. More disorganized than ever. More disenchanted with one another than ever before. But we're back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Joe, Lo, Dibs, 95.7 The Game. I think we're going to have a full squad for at least a few days here before someone's off again. It's got to be coming. You got something coming up, I'm sure, big guy?
Yeah, I got to get one in. I think I may do something here in a couple weeks, just a day. Heading to Tennessee, a little sign, little autograph signing, Joe. Go make a little money.
Got to get that paper.
Get that paper, baby.
Got to get you on the podium with another recreation of the Music City Miracle. It's always my favorite when Lo catches the imaginary kick on a dais and does about 17 Michael Jackson moves before giving it to Frank.
Suited and booted, too.
Totally.
Suited and booted. That's what this show is. That is where we will begin. Three guests today. Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, set to join us at 6:30. Brian Baldinger at 8:30. John Clayton at 9:30. You may notice a trend. Goodbye, basketball conversation. We have had enough of you. Thank you for all the storylines. Thank you for all of the trades, the action. We owe you. We love you. Going to take a timeout from you.
Thank God.
I'd imagine everyone's got to be feeling pretty good about that. We've got some Giants conversation to get to in just a few minutes. Training camp, 11 days away.
Yeah.
And that's something we're going to dive into in just a bit. But I want to start. Can I get a highlight? Because you know what? For the last couple of years, there haven't been many of these when it comes to one of the local baseball teams. But, things are changing. So, without further ado, as I continue to draw this out, is there an opportunity where you can hit a button and play me a highlight?
Welcome back.
Was anyone actually listening to me while I was talking?
Don't worry. Take a timeout.
Quite all right. The Giants defeat the Milwaukee Brewers yesterday by a final score of 8-3. They took 2 of 3 from Milwaukee, who, by the way, went 7 with the Dodgers in the NLCS last year. And they have now won 8 of 10 while scoring an average of 7.5 runs per game. Dibs are coming right to you. Fresh off of a golf tournament this weekend. Hope it went well. This team, are we buying or are we selling? Because Lankford set the topic this morning. Are we buying or are we selling at the trade
deadline? We're buying, Joe, and we've been buying since last week when I got into a very uncomfortable shouting match with one Alan Roxy Bernstein over the idea of in it or out of it. And I simply was pointing out that even though you are behind some 9, 10, whatever, 30 teams in the wild card race, if you're 6.5 games out with basically 85 left to go, mathematically, you're still in it. And the team thinks you're still in it. And I personally look at the numbers and think you're still in it. Now you sit here on a Monday and you're only 4.5 games out of the wild card. Now, I don't necessarily think you go out and you buy at the deadline, but you certainly look to stand pat and try to stay in this race because you're in it. You're playing great.
That means Bumgarner and Will Smith, right? That would mean standing pat with Bumgarner and Will Smith?
Yes, and I think that if you look at particularly Madison Bumgarner and the market for starting pitchers, it's not as high as it was a year ago, 4 months ago. So the idea of possibly re-signing Madison Bumgarner, I think, is now on the table because if you trade him, and I understand that right now, trade-wise, teams are looking to get an absolute king's ransom back and teams aren't willing to do it. I mean, you saw the Homer Bailey deal, and I know Homer Bailey's no Madison Bumgarner, but teams aren't willing to part with that many assets for a rental, so you might be in a situation where you re-sign Bumgarner after all.
You're in the best possible shape. I like seeing you. You're sweaty. You got your workout in. You're standing.
Yeah.
You look good.
You look good right now.
I
feel good, Joe, and this Giant team should feel good. They should feel good what they've been able to do. You know, 8 out of the last 10 pulled off a victory. And last week, I was in the same church as, you know, we were on you last week, Daniel.
On me.
And I was, too.
You were by yourself on this, and then it was Lowe and Allen versus you? Yeah.
Yes, and then Allen. Top Rope, who's off this week, was top roping, as she is wont to do.
And it was very frequent and often, which that's, you know, to her credit.
It's on brand.
Yes, she's keeping it consistent. But as I digest, Dibs, I'm still not in the same church, nor am I in the same pew as you.
Ouch.
I think that if you look at this Giant team and see what they're doing, it's absolutely amazing. I have seen teams, you see it in every sport, sometimes they get hot. I remember back in the day, the Baltimore Ravens, when the day we went to the Super Bowl, they won 8 straight, but it was just too much, too little, too late. And people, sometimes teams are surging. We see it every year, they're surging. And like, man, if they had 10 more games, if they had a couple more games to get back in this thing, they would be right there. They don't. And I think that is the situation that the Giants, yes, this is a great run, but I think it's just too little, too late. I think when you look at the Giants, you say, what are they going to do? Why should they be sellers? Why should they be buyers? What the Giants to do? Foron's done a great job of bringing in extra guys, different guys, and you see a lot of these guys have translated into manufacturing more runs. It's been good outfielder things that they've been able to do. But you look at Madison, you say, should we trade or should we keep Madison? It's going to be dependent on the value. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to, I think that Foron will trade anyone and everyone. Everyone's exposable on this team. But it's going to come down to value. Even though they seem as if they're 4 games back now, so they're right there, he's going to look at this now and say, is Madison Bumgarner getting more value? If he's going to go up and he pitched, the more value he gets, and the more value he gets, the more assets you can do, I think that they're going to, I think they will trade him then. But if he doesn't, I think you look at this team and say, who are the guys on this team that's going to be here? Is Posey going to put butts in the seat or is not? You look at Brandon Crawford. A lot of these salaries, they can't eat up. So when is this team, in my opinion, more than trading? I think he's going to come to a realization, Joe, that it's time now to eat up salaries. This team, because they can't trade. Some of these guys are not tradable and there's too much salary.
Hey, Bell hit a home run yesterday.
I think it's going to be time that they're going to say, you know what? These guys, these are assets that we can't move. And you know what? We're always going over luxury tax. We don't mind. When are you going to say, hey, I'm just going to let those ones just eat up and let them wash away? And I think the Giants will do that this offseason.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. More than anything else, the last few weeks of Giants baseball have been watchable.
Yeah.
This is a watchable baseball team. Even in some of these defeats, like, what was it, Friday night?
Friday was the win.
Friday was the win, so Saturday.
I had the plus money, plus 185. That was a nice one for your boy.
Good for you.
Yeah, good friend of the program was on the other side, so it was a little bit of an uncomfortable back and forth. A guy by the name of Steiny. He was on.
Good friend of the program. Let's not, you know, well, start with us that much hyperbole.
Things got a little bit uncomfortable.
Acquaintance of the program.
As he was rooting for Milwaukee, and the Giants able to scratch it out against Josh Hader, who doesn't give up runs.
Never.
And then, you know, Crawford with the big home run, and on to the extra innings, Buster Posey with the grand salami to get it done. 8-10.
Did you celebrate in his face?
I kind of did, Joe.
Yeah, you have to.
We were in the sports book. shout out the Pepper Mill in Reno.
That's great. That's great.
Fantastic. And yeah, the whole sports book was going crazy except for one guy who was shaking his head quietly. So pretty good moment for the Dibber.
And plus money. That's a really good moment.
Yeah, and a little really two-team par-par with the Braves who also came home. So your boy was on a little bit of a mini heater, a little mini heater.
Look out, Reno.
Yeah, well, it brought it to its knees.
Yeah.
Peppermill had to shut down because your boy. But anyway.
Is it America's largest little city or littlest large city? What's the littlest big city? What's
yeah,
the Reno?
Biggest little city, I
biggest
think.
Biggest little city?
Yeah.
Well, look out. You're about to have a bad third quarter fiscally.
Sorry about that,
thanks to one
Reno.
Daniel D.
Yeah,
Dibley.
Exactly.
Okay, so it was Saturday night then. The Saturday night defeat and extra innings. Still a watchable game,
yeah.
Right? Had a lead, let it get away. You come down 4-2. It's like, we've seen this before. Dyson let him down. No big deal. Come back Sunday. Yet, you score 2 in the 9th, and you send it to Maranta in the 10th. Now, the defense, Crawford with the air and everything else that took place, watchable games, though. This is where we're at right now. But we have a habit as sports fans of going super hot. Like, we go from 0 to 100 very quickly. And in that process, we kind of live in the moment, but then we immediately project to the future. This is what we see in basketball. A trade happens, and it's like, oh, my God, it's either the best trade, the worst trade. And then after 30 seconds has been spent on that, it's what does this mean for next year and 2 years and 3 years down the road? There are people that are already writing basketball articles about next year's free agent class. I don't care. I don't care about next year's free agent class. I'm going to be honest with you. We just did a lot of basketball. It has been fantastic from a storyline perspective. Let's take a break. Everybody Please. In this room loves their wives. We all like a break every now and again. And they love us, but they want a break every now and again. Just a quick timeout here and there. Instead, while we determine whether or not buyers or sellers and all that stuff's in play, it has been enjoyable. And this is the first time since what? The first half of the 2016 season that there's been some enjoyable baseball to watch down there. They're scoring runs.
Right.
They're scoring runs in bunches.
And they're a threat to actually hit home runs. And it's not just waiting for Brandon Belt, who, I wonder if he's going to get to 10 home runs this year. You've got Austin Slater. You've got Dickerson. You've got guys up and down the lineup who at least are a threat to have extra bases or hit a home run. And that in and of itself is more exciting than what we've seen in 2 years.
Here's something for you. I don't know if you want to get into the should they move in the fences or not situation, but at home this season, the Giants, 20-26. They've played 46 games at home. They've played 46 games on the road, and they're 23-23. They are a 500 road team, fifth best road record in the National League. And oh, by the way, they've hit 26 more home runs on the road. They've scored 44 plus 35 is 79. 79 more runs on the road than they have at home. Now, if you look at the splits from a pitching perspective, they've done better at home than on the road. Obviously, you would expect that as well, but not to this extent. Not to this extent. They're a fun team when they get outside that park. All right. More on that. We've got Dan Orlovsky because we've got to kick off our football coverage in about 20 minutes. It's Joe. It's Low. It's Dibs. It's 95.7 The Game.
Joe, Low, and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Niners roster reporting to Santa Clara for the start of training camp in just 11 days. First practice is in 12 days. We will talk to Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, about that and more in roughly 14 minutes as we kick off our NFL coverage. It's your boys, Joe, Low, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Bear with me for a second as I talk about Wimbledon because I'm bringing it right back to baseball. How is it in tennis they literally don't make any mistakes from an officiating standpoint? Sure, the umpire may call a ball out when it's in or may call a ball in when it's out. There's a very quick review to which we all get to be brought in on the process. They show it up on the screen. It's a great graphic. It zooms in, and it's either in or out. There's a reaction. There's an immediate adjustment if need be, and play continues. When a match of tennis ends, there have been literally no mistakes with which you can go back and say, well, Federer should have won yesterday, but he got jobbed in the third set. No, it's completely clean. How do we not have this in all sports?
It's very difficult in other sports to have that sort of Hawkeye technology that they have in tennis with the overhead
camera.
Is that
what it's actually called?
Yes.
Hawkeye technology?
Yeah, and you can see, and you remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but they used to have it first on the service line to tell whether or not a serve was in or out. It would make that beeping noise. And that way, the line judge could make the call without having to visually see it. Serve going 130 miles an hour, it's tough. But now with the overhead Hawkeye system, the calls are crystal clear. And that's why I love instant replay in tennis only. These other sports haven't gotten anywhere near that level of accuracy and expediency, as you were saying.
Like, did you watch any of this yesterday? You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
It makes it look so easy.
It is. It is very easy. It's so efficient. People can they throw their hand up. They want to challenge it. And boom, you get to see it. So it meets the eye test. When it comes to other sports, though, you got to realize it's judgment. You can call PI on every single call. You can call holding on every single call. So when you look at it, when it comes perspective as far as basketball, if a guy's putting the hand on him, hand checking, are you going to call it? You can call it pretty much every time down the court. You can call something. So I think that if you look at basketball, and I think a lot of them will still, the calls will get overturned. Things will happen now when they got the instant replay. But it'll never be as efficient in tennis because it's black and white. There is a line. There is no judgment call. It's in or it's out.
The Atlantic League of minor league baseball is toying with the idea of A, robot umpires, which is going to be very interesting if you eliminate the balls and strikes problem. But that's an argument for a few moments from now. And number two, a concept where if you're batting and at any point while you're batting, a pitch gets away from a catcher, you can take off for first and, quote, steal first base. You can steal first. So imagine it's the first pitch of a game. Yeah. Breaking ball in the dirt, gets past the catcher, you can take off for first. And if you get there, you're safe, you're on first. And if you get thrown out, no more at bat, it's done, you're out. Love or hate?
Hate, and I don't know if hate's...
Have you had enough time to think about it?
No, I probably haven't, Joe, if you will just indulge me for... Yes, I still hate it, Joe. It's just maybe that... I won't say it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, because I've heard some pretty stupid things, but how ridiculous is that? I understand a missed third strike... You can run to first base where the catcher can't handle strike three. You have a chance to make it to first. But any pitch at any time, that's not baseball. Now you're just playing pickle.
could make baseball interesting again.
I know that's what they want. They want to get people on first base, and now they think that's going to manufacture more runs. So, but it will make it exciting. Okay, a pitch gets away on the first one, and it goes out. Now the guy's going to run to first. It's too easy. I think that you are reaching. I don't like it. I understand what they're trying to do, but I'm with you on this one, Daniel. I don't like it.
Look at that. Bringing people together.
Yeah. So great.
Instant replay, bringing people together again.
Yeah.
As well as wild cockamamie ideas for how guys can get on base.
Right. Exactly. It's like, yeah, just get on base. You know what? If the bat's a bad pitch, take off. You can got it, you know? God, the pitcher throws first pitch of the game. All of a sudden, it's a bad pitch. It hits the ground. All right, the guy's just running. I mean, I just think that there's better ways. And to have a guy now have to not earn anything, a pitcher ball just slips out of his hand. I do understand it on the last strike, foul ball, whatever it may be. You can go then. But I just think I think it's unnecessary.
Buying or selling the Giants going 31-39 at a minimum. 31-39 over their last 70 games to get to 2,000 wins for Bruce Bochy. This was something that at the beginning of the season, I think we were all pretty much selling on it. And if there were any buyers, it wasn't one of those, I'll absolutely prison bet by it. But now, given the fact that the team's played 92 games, they're 6-under over the course of 92, but they're playing really good baseball since June 1st, do you see a scenario where they win 31 of their last 70 and get Boch to 2,000?
Absolutely. And I, at the start of the year, was on the side and of the camp that he would get there. 74-88 was the numbers that he needed to get to 2,000 at the start of the year. And I thought that that was a reasonable number, 74 victories. And now you sit 43-49. They're doing better than their run expectancy, their Pythagorean expectation based on runs for, runs against. I've had some days off here, Joe. I'm coming in fresh. But I think you look at it now, they're going to be competing at least until the trade deadline. And then after that, let's say they do decide to sell off some pieces, whatever young players come up, they're going to be trying to prove themselves, and the veterans who remain, they know that Bruce Bochy is this close to 2,000, so I think they're going to be grinding this thing all the way to the end.
31-39. Win 31 of 70 and Boch gets to 2,000. Are you in Dibs' camp with this as well?
No. This one, I'm not, unfortunately. Man. I mean, it's going to be close. I think that they're showing a lot of heart, but you look at, you know, who they got coming up. You look at Colorado, and you think about the New York, all the teams that they have, Chicago.
The Metropolitans.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at Philly. Yeah, Philly's probably a dirtbag. They can probably handle Philly.
Interesting how that played out. You're selling the Mets. And
that was for you. I miss you, Joe.
Yeah,
they're
a train wreck.
But
that team's a mess.
Oh, my God.
They're talking about selling that team. How do you spend $330 million on a guy who doesn't go to the All-Star game? You don't even need to play well to go to the All-Star game. You can get voted in. It's not like there's a hard process for it.
I saw that, and I was like, wow. No bar ice.
Machado didn't go either.
I know.
$630 million not going to the All-Star game.
What does that do for free agency coming up? That's going to make teams like, huh, see what happened? You paid all these guys this big-time money, and they're not panning out. But you look at, you know, Arizona, you look at San Diego, all those teams that they're having to play. I think the baseball is going to start getting a little tougher, and it's great to see the Giants play as well as they are. They understand what's at stake. The guys are playing hard for the skipper, but they're playing hard for themselves. I mean, as players, you hate being kicked around, and people say you guys are bombs and trash and can't win. And all of a sudden, you see this Giant team. They've come together. It's a band of brothers, and they're playing a lot harder. They're manufacturing runs. Like you said, at least they're a lot more exciting. They're manufacturing runs.
These are fun games to watch.
Yes, and they weren't doing that early. So now they're in games. They have a chance to win games. I just think that now you're going to start seeing – I think it will get tougher. All-Star breaks over. Had some games played this past weekend. Now it's going to be, okay, who's in the hunt? I think teams are going to start playing harder as well. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for those guys to go 31 out of 39.
The first 56 games of the season took the Giants through May 31st, right? So start of the season through the last game in May, they went 22-34, so they're 12-under with a minus 89 run differential. They were as bad as advertised before the season started. Since then, 21-15, that's a winning percentage of .583. If they had maintained a .583 winning percentage from the start until now, they'd be third best in the National League. Third best. So 21-15 with a plus +26 run differential. I do not envy the position Farhan Zaidi is in heading into the trade deadline, because they're playing well enough to have started this narrative of maybe they shouldn't sell, maybe they should buy, maybe they can go for it. Do not get caught up in that. We are talking about 22% of the season. 21-15, it's been a great run, but enjoy it for what it's been. It's been a great run. If you do not move your key assets now and get a maximum return on that investment, you are just setting this rebuild back longer. I want you to go back to the All-Star break in 2016. Giants were the best team in the first half of the season. They were the worst team in the second half, got into the playoffs, won against the Mets in the wild card game, and then lost in what was it, 4 to the Cubs when, you know, they blew that ninth inning lead down at what was AT&T, now Oracle. Since that time, they are 210 and 278. 210 and 278 from the second half of the 2016 season until now. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a legitimate sample size. And that's a team that's been struggling. Don't forget it. This has been a fun run, but this is where Zaidi is going to get himself into a predicament because he knows they need to sell. He knows the rebuild needs to be the plan. But you have this nice little 36-game window since June 1st where you're 21 and 15 and now everyone's thinking, maybe, just maybe, we can find a way to make another run.
You just sit 4.5 back and you got 13 of the next 20 are on the road where you've been better on the road than you've been at home. And you look at a Colorado series and then you've got the hapless Mets. After those two series, if you go 6-2 over the next 8, all of a sudden you have a tougher call. If you go 3-5 over the next 8, fine, you can really see yourself fading out of it. I think this next week is absolutely everything for this cute little story.
Look at us elevating that to the next level. This week is the week to end all weeks for the San Francisco Giants. 4 with the Rockies and 4 with the Mets.
Biggest week in 5 years, Coach, I got to tell you.
All right, good stuff. Warm up with a little baseball. Now it's time for the entree. We are closing in on the start of training camp. It is time to finally start talking NFL football. Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback on Garoppolo, the Niners, and what to expect this season in a flash here on Joe Low and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. But first, woo, am I rusty? But first, that nonsensical tease brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. Here is Nice Guy Steven with what's coming up on The Game.
Thank you, Joe. And what's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Sonic Internet. The Giants get the series win over the Brewers after taking 2 of 3 from them over the weekend. They travel to Colorado for a 4-game stint against the Rockies. We do have some NFL news from this morning. The 49ers and kicker Robbie Gould have finally agreed to a contract as the deadline to sign franchise players is today. The deal is worth 2 years with $10.5 million fully guaranteed. Will they get a deal done for Nick Bosa before training camp? The guys will discuss that and more with the professor, John Clayton, at 9:30. NFL training camp is less than 2 weeks away, and this football season, 95.7 The Game is bringing you the biggest names, including Hall of Famers Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, and Michael Irvin, former 49ers head coach Steve Mariucci, NFL Network's Brian Baldinger, who will join Joe Low and Dibs this morning at 8:30, and more. You'll hear from all of our NFL insiders this week on 95.7 The Game. Coming up, NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky joins the guys. I'm Stephen Langford on the Bay Area's number one sports station. That's 95.7 The Game.
Joe Low and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All guests appear on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across existing devices. We mentioned the Dialpad guest line because that is where we head right now to welcome in former NFL quarterback, now a terrific NFL analyst for ESPN, Dan Orlovsky, joining Joe Low and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Dan, good morning and thank you for your time. We will jump right into it with you because we know your time is precious. We're just a handful of days away from the start of training camp. Niner fans are very interested in how Jimmy Garoppolo will bounce back from last year's knee injury. You played the position. You played it for a long time. What are you expecting from Jimmy Garoppolo this season?
Well, good morning. Good to be with you guys. You know, I've had high expectations for Jimmy Garoppolo really since we first got the opportunity to watch him play a couple of times in New England and him perform so well. And then when he got the marriage with Kyle Shanahan, Kyle is a guy that I played for. I understand how good he is. So many people have really gotten to understand how smart he is. And for Jimmy, you know, so many people talk about the maturation of quarterbacks and we only tie it to their understanding of like offensive football in the NFL or their understanding of defensive football. And we call this maturity process of decision making and all that, but strictly to X's and O's. And what I want to see him truly understand is, and I don't make too big a deal of like the ACL injury last year and people calling for him to step out of bounds. But there is a maturation process to understanding that. You know, there is a process to go through as you get more accustomed to being the guy and being the leader and realizing how important it is, to be on the field and stay on the field and be the guy moving forward, because it's such a crucial year. So I'm looking forward to most, more than, I know guys are going to get open for him because of the offense, and I know that they've made some nice additions and he's a really good player, but understanding how important it is, he no longer needs to prove that he's tough. He does not need, he's not in that state anymore that you have to prove yourself to your teammates. He's done that already, so make sure he's in full understanding of, I have to do everything I can to stay on the field. And sometimes in moments, that means stepping out of bounds. That sometimes in moments, it means getting the ball out of my hands and not taking this hit. Sometimes it means making sure that I'm protecting myself so that I'm available for my teammates. And that's the, like, probably the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to seeing, his maturation. The comfort level with the knee will come. He'll be fine when it comes to that. But just him truly understanding and stepping forward into the realm of, okay, I'm the most important person in this building, in our organization, and I have to treat every single moment of my life like that.
How can the 49ers elevate their wide receiver core? Because obviously they had big turnover, Pierre Garçon gone, Jordan Matthews in, and a bunch of unproven rookies and young players. How critical is it for the receivers to come out and play well to help out Jimmy G as he recovers from his knee issue?
Yeah, that's obviously huge. I mean, Kittle being there is a big deal. That offensive line is still solid. The run game will be really good. Dante will take another step forward. He was a guy that I really liked coming out last year. Certainly had flashes. And what is he going to be with a starting quarterback in the NFL? Deebo is going to be a great addition in Kyle's offense because he's going to be the guy that Kyle's going to do all the fun stuff with. Kyle is a play caller where he's not scared to try new stuff. But you've got to have guys to try stuff with, just different stuff. Andy Reid is notorious for it. Sean Payton's notorious for it. So those receivers, if they can continue to take steps, you know, continue to win in man-to-man coverage, continue to understand where the soft spots are in zones, their ability to do a bunch of different stuff creativity-wise with this offense is only going to allow Jimmy to be more comfortable. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to man-to-man situations, because usually when defenses play man-to-man, it means they're coming after the quarterback. And for a guy coming off a knee injury, you come after the quarterback, we feel some pressure, some people around our feet, and we want to get the ball out of our hands. And if no one's open, that's really difficult to do. And so those guys, the biggest thing for a Dante Pettis or a Kittle or a Deebo Samuel is making sure that they're winning in man-to-man coverage and early, so Garoppolo gets the ball out of his hands and gets settled and comfortable back in the pocket.
Dan, let's stay right there. You just talked about something I was going to ask you, talking about Jimmy G being comfortable. What are you looking for when you see a quarterback and you see him in the pocket, and like you just alluded to, they're playing some press man, they want to make him hold on to the ball, coming off a knee injury, guys are down there by his feet. What is going to be that next transition you can say, okay, I wanted to see, can Jimmy handle this? What do you want to see him go through? What do you want to see that you know that he's really ready and comfortable standing in the pocket, especially coming off the injury?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is this. I mean, we're coming off the NBA Finals, right? And sometimes in basketball, you obviously in your guys' area, there's Steph Curry, right? Where Steph never hesitates to shoot. The ball's in his hand, whether off the dribble or catching a pass, and the ball's going up. Like, there's no hesitancy. He's not scared. He doesn't dip his toe in the water. He's just going full cannonball. That's what I want to see out of Jimmy G. Don't be hesitant. You don't want to see the, when you get back in the pocket and the ball, you know, go side to side and, okay, can I pull the trigger or not? You know, you want to see him so confident in himself, in his decision-making, in the knee, in the play call, in the people around him, that there's no hesitancy.
Sure.
The ball is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out, and there's confidence with it. That was one of the things that I liked about him the most. Really, when he got to San Francisco, was the, you can tell that he was really confident where he was going with the football. Now, it helped to have a guy like Pierre, but the biggest step for that is, do I trust this receiver? Do I trust Kittle man-to-man? Do I trust Deebo Samuel man-to-man? Do I trust Dante Pettis man-to-man? Do I trust a Goodwin man-to-man? That's the biggest thing for a quarterback. So when it comes to on the field, Jimmy G, are you completely confident and having no hesitancy when you're throwing the ball?
ESPN's Dan Orlovsky with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Given the state of both the NFC and the NFC West, what's the ceiling for the San Francisco 49ers this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a loaded division, obviously. It's their offense will be good, and I know their defense is a lot rebuilt, and people make a big deal over the turnovers and or the lack thereof last year. Turnovers come in waves. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. If Bosa's healthy, that's obviously a big deal. I really believe the Cardinals are going to be a lot better. Seattle's going to be good. The Rams are the Rams. I'm a little bit more down on the Rams than some people. What's their ceiling? If everyone stays healthy and that defense becomes markedly improved when it comes to, you know, creating some of those turnovers, they could be right in the mix near the end of the year, because the Rams have to replace 40% of the best offensive line in football. That doesn't just happen. The Seahawks have to replace one of the most underappreciated yet most valuable players in that division over the last 8 years, and Doug Baldwin. And Arizona, who's made some nice pieces, there's the unknown. So if Jimmy comes back and healthy and plays the way he's shown he's capable of, and that defense is better, San Francisco could be right in the mix come December for that division and a playoff spot. I absolutely believe that. But they got to stay healthy.
Dan, one more before we let you go, and it's about the 18-game schedule proposal with word that perhaps players would only be asked or allowed to play in 16 of the 18. What do you make of this proposal and the potential that the NFL does go to an 18-game schedule?
Yeah, I think it's stupid. Let alone like the more games, you know, and all that jazz with it. I got two questions or two issues with it. We are now asking head coaches in the NFL to be more than just head coaches. Like, they have to manage instant replay, and then they have to manage when to throw this flag, and now they've got to manage when to play certain guys.
Sure.
So now we might take a really good football coach and, in a way, almost penalize him because he may not be as good as another coach with roster shuffling or whatnot. And then my next question is this. When do you sit the starting offensive lineman? Because are you going to play your starting quarterback with a backup left tackle? Like, do you know? So it seems like we just might be taking some of the pieces of a preseason game that no one wants to watch and transitioning them into the regular season. Like, if I'm the starting quarterback and I'm playing against anybody in the NFL, and my head coach comes in on Monday and goes, okay, guys, we're gonna sit the starting left tackle this week, I'm going to be like, wait, what? No, we're not. I'm not playing. So that's my thing, is like, how does that get handled? And again, we might be penalizing a team and a head coach who's a really good head coach because he mismanaged something that he's never had to do before, because coaches are so conditioned. Hey, can you play or can you not play? But, okay, cool, then you're playing. Rather than, you know what, week 12 we're going to sit you, and week 14 we're going to sit you. What's the point of that?
Former NFL quarterback, now NFL analyst for ESPN, Dan Orlovsky with us here on 95.7 The Game. Terrific stuff, Dan. Thank you so much for jumping on this morning. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. Have a good day.
NFL training camp is less than 2 weeks away, and this football season, 95.7 The Game is bringing you the biggest names, including Hall of Famers Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, Michael Irvin, former 49ers head coach Steve Mariucci, NFL Network's Brian Baldinger, and more. We're loaded with top-notch guests. You'll hear from all of our NFL insiders this week on 95.7 The Game, which includes Brian Baldinger at 8:30, just under 2 hours from now. The latest on Robbie Gould, plus an 18-game season. Who's up for it? Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Back in a flash here on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowe and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, let's begin with the breaking news out of Santa Clara. Adam Schefter, ESPN. Who else? If we're talking hoops, it's Woj. If we're talking the NFL, it's generally Schefter. the Niners and kicker Robbie Gould have reached an agreement on a long-term deal, beating today's deadline. Remember, all franchise players in the NFL, each team's allowed to have one, should they so use to designate the tag on a player. They have until today to reach a long-term agreement with these players. After today, that's it. The only option is playing on the franchise tag or not playing at all. The Niners and Gold got something done. It is a two-year deal, $10.5 million, fully guaranteed. There is also an option clause in there after the second year. Should it be exercised, and it doesn't say, but I'm assuming this is a team option, should it be exercised, the deal becomes a four-year, $19 million contract with $15 million guaranteed for Robbie Gould. Kicker, how do you feel about that?
It's a kicker. They done moved on up, brother. My goodness.
They done came up like 7-0.
They done came up. Gold. Congratulations, brother. What's that smell? New money.
It's great money.
Guaranteed. 2 years, 10 mil.
10 and a half mil. Don't sleep on the 0.5.
Yeah, and 500K, I could use that.
He should make sure he sends a nice gift basket, one of those ones with fruit and wine and all that stuff. To Adam Vinatieri,
the Bears.
I was going to say Adam Vinatieri because Vinatieri is showing you that you can kick well into your 40s, damn near your 50s. So
yeah.
If you're Robbie Gould, you're one of the best in the business, but you can look at Adam Vinatieri and say, yeah, I deserve 4 years. Robbie Gould is 36 years old right now, which is old for a football player, but not old for a kicker when
you're
looking at...
He's just entering his prime.
Exactly.
Morton Anderson. I played with Morton. Me and Morton.
Where did you play with Morton? He played everywhere, and you played a lot of places as well.
Well, me and him were together with the Saints.
So when you came into the league, he was kicking with New Orleans?
He was kicking with the one bar. Morton was still old and frigging decrepit and beat up. He was in his late 30s when I was with him in New Orleans.
I should be texting Nikki right now. Get those two outside. Get them kicking.
Absolutely.
Enough with this swinging the baseball bat. Two 6 years service time. It takes too long.
And you can play forever. You don't get hit. You're in a
great
position.
Also, if they're running at you and you need to make a play, you can just jump out of the way and no one's going to yell at you. You got to make that. No one gets mad at
you. Get down!
It is one of pro sports' better jobs.
No,
it really is.
Anderson went from 82 with the Saints to 2007 with the Falcons. 26.
Wait, what was the first year?
82, coach.
And I came in 93.
Shout out to boy Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
seriously.
I was already, think about it, 82 with the Saints. I was frigging into 92.
You didn't come in until the early 90s?
Yes. And he was in his 30s. That's what I was saying. He was in his 30s when I was with him. 26 years?
That was like when Vinatieri left the Patriots. It's like, all right, he might have a few years left. He's been kicking with the Colts longer. He'll go into the Hall of Fame as a Colts
kicker.
Take a look at those numbers. He's been with the Colts for so long. The guy's completely gray now. Gray.
Oh, completely.
Not Sonny Gray.
He's a cockroach.
Gray in the beard.
Well done.
36 years old. Has only been, this is Robbie Gould, interestingly enough, only been to one Pro Bowl all the way back in 2006. And he has had some really good seasons. 2 years with the Niners. Here are the numbers. 75 field goal attempts over the last two seasons for the Niners. He's converted 72 of 75. From 40 yards out, he's 32 of 34. From 50 out, he's 6 of 6. But PATs, 55 of 59. A little dicey there.
Yeah, he's been missing them in bunches. And that, by the way, is with the new PAT. It's not the old school PAT. I believe the last 2 years is when they've moved the PAT back.
And this has been bankable. I mean, he's as bankable as anyone in the business. And his value is more so than people realize because you have to remember something. This team has struggled greatly under Kyle Shanahan in the red zone. Now, we all know that the quarterback situation has been a bit of a mess. They've gone with some backup type players, and we love them all. We love them all, don't get me wrong. But they have been awful in the red zone. Last year, in terms of red zone touchdown percentage, your percentage of converting red zone trips into touchdowns, nobody was worse than the Niners. They ranked dead last, 32nd. The year before, under Kyle Shanahan, in his first year, they ranked 27th. So if you're not going to convert when you get down there, you got to be able to get something away from it. And this leads us into one of the big questions with the 49ers this year. Can they improve upon their red zone touchdown percentage? It's what's referred to as four-point plays, a third down in the red zone. That's a four-point play right there. You either convert it and go on to score a touchdown, or you don't, you settle for a field goal. Four-point plays. People don't look at it like that, and it slips through the cracks. This is important. This year, you go from dead last in touchdown conversions in the red zone, nowhere to go but up. Garoppolo coming back, the additions they made in free agency. Do you think this could be a team that ranks in the top half? I mean, how hard is it to change that issue, if that is an issue with your football team, I'm sure you've played on teams that had that issue teams that didn't have that issue.
Yeah, we had a guy by the name of LaDainian Thompson, so we didn't have many red zone issues.
I was going to say, you guys were all right in the red zone.
And that's
decent little tight end, too, I think, in San Diego.
Yeah, in Diego.
He's still alive and playing.
He's still doing it. But that's what the Niners, they got a tight end, but can they run the ball? See, when you're in the red zone, Joe, everyone wants to play a little cover four, mostly cover eight. They want to make sure they go quarter, and they want to make sure you get those zones. So you got four deep, four in the middle. So you know that they're going to play eight. Got four underneath, four deep. They know that that's what they're doing, and it's hard for the quarterback to get the ball in the windows. But if you know you got four dropping, then you got four dropping behind them, that's eight guys in coverage. You have to be able to run the ball in that red zone, and you can't let teams get down and play cover eight the whole day. So if you can run the ball, you run them right out of that cover eight. Now they got to go play some man. They got to switch up the different coverages, and that's when you start getting the go ahead and start winning on the outside, and that's when your tight end can be great as well, because now you got to go over man, got a certain zone. But when you sit back and you can drop eight, it's hard in the red zone to get in there. So that's why you got to have the ability to run the ball, Daniel.
I love hearing you talking football and seeing the bounce in your step over
there.
So
happy.
You know,
I was so locked in on him.
Totally. And you know football's coming when you get your first quarter, when he's talking about the cover four and the cover eight. I'm stoked. Football's coming, Lo. You got me fired up right now.
It's coming, coach. Let's get it.
And I think the fact that they have...
It's arousing in a non-sexual sort of way.
Wow. You know, hey.
What do you mean, wow?
Hey.
I thought that was pretty well
said. And good morning. Hey.
Arousing in a non-sexual sort of way, you perv.
When you get to be my age, that's the only arousal you get anymore.
Whoa.
Sports arousal.
Guru can help you with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
He shoots.
Sure.
Thank you, Goo. I think the fact that they have more of a diverse running back stable, and also Jordan Matthews, I think, is going to be the big key, because if I'm playing as a defensive coordinator, I'm playing defense against this Niner team, no way you're letting George Kittle beat you in the red zone. You got to double team him. So the 49ers, you got to look to other weapons, and maybe Jordan Matthews at 6'3" is a guy they'll look to in the red zone.
Jalen Hurd, the third-round pick from Baylor, 6'5".
Wow.
Now, third-round pick, so it's going to take some time to get onto the field, and at the same time, in the red zone, to be trusted and to get on the same page as your quarterback in terms of the back shoulder fade, where to be at a certain time. But at 6'5", you got to figure that's the type of body you would want down there inside the 20.
Absolutely. You can flood zones and make sure that you got guys, a couple guys in the area, and now you got another guy across there. So it's so many different things that this team should do. You got Jalen, like you said, 6'5". Hopefully he can win that jump ball. And Kittle, what, 6'5", as well? So you got some big targets for Jimmy G. The biggest thing, God, can they run the ball? Can they move the ball in the red zone? If you can do that, you just change the dynamics of the defense. And the defense now, you make them have to you dictate what the defense can do. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting year for the Niners, especially when it comes to the red zone.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Great to be back in the saddle. The band is back together. We got a big show in store for you today as we find ourselves just 11 days away from when 49er players will report for training camp. First practice, 12 days from today. Brian Baldinger, former NFL offensive lineman, NFL insider extraordinaire, set to join us at 8:30. John Clayton, NFL insider, will join us at 9:30 on the dial pad guest line. We're going to come right back to the Niners. We got to get into some Giants stuff as well. Loaded show today, so make sure you're locked in all the way through. But I want to start right here because we teased it and we didn't get to it yet. The NFL owners, that is, the league, Roger Goodell, proposing yet again moving to an 18-game regular season, but with a bit of a twist this time around. They want 18 games because, of course, they want more money. But within the 18 games, there will be a rule in order to help protect the players from injuries, because this has always been the big counter. Well, if we go to 18 games, there's going to be more injuries. Well, each player on the team would be required to sit 2 games. So no player can play more than 16 games. You have 16 games. So imagine you're the 49ers. You have an 18-game schedule. Jimmy Garoppolo can only play in 16 of those games. Now, if he gets hurt, that would count as one of the misses. But if he's healthy, you have to use him in 16 of 18. Let's start with a two-part question that I'm going to ask both of you. Question A, do you like the idea of moving to 18 games? And then question B, Lo, do you like the idea of, if you move to 18 games, players only playing in 16 games?
Well, question A, do I like the idea of 18 games?
Yes.
No. I
I think if only the reason why I say no, because the second part of the question, because they only can play in 16. So if you said they could, then my answer could be different.
Okay, so let's do that then.
Yeah.
If you move to 18 games,
yes.
But the guys can play in all 18, and presumably they'd get more money as a result,
right.
You'd be okay with that?
I would be okay, because if the players want more money and they want more money, then, hey, look, don't pay me. And guys, I think guys are going to be in the same – I think most of the guys you will hear them say, if they want to receive more money, you can't tell them they can't play there, because those two games, that's playoffs. If you can get in the playoffs, you're talking about more money. So guys are like, look, if I'm going to play 18 games, if that's going to be the rule and we're going to go 18 games, you can't limit me to only playing 16, because I can go ahead and play more of those games. So I think that's going to be hard to keep playing, even though people say, oh, players don't want to play more games. That's right. Maybe they don't necessarily want, but when they know they can get more finances and then they have an opportunity to get in a playoff, a guy don't want to sit back and he knows he can play two more games to help his team get in. He's going to want to play.
Interesting. Where do you land on all this?
I say 16 games is fine. You don't need to expand to 18, and certainly you don't need to expand to 18 with this cockamania, as
right.
We like to say in this program, rule where you'd have to sit guys for two games. I was just thinking, what other sport in the world has a rule where you're limited as far as how many games you can play? In college football, in baseball, and basketball, there's no other sport where there's a rule on how many games of a maximum schedule you're allowed to play. So that, to me, is a ridiculous notion. Then I think about 18 games. I love football, fantasy, the pick contest, all that stuff. It's so great. But what we have already in football is a product that's somewhat watered down. And by having two more games for Tampa Bay, two more games for the Buffalo Bills. Sorry, Nikki, your lovely wife who's from Buffalo.
Hey, they're going to be all right this year.
Took a shot. I had a shot to take. I had to take it. A shot created must be taken.
Yeah,
you could pick the Detroit Lions. We need to have two more Lions games, damn it. I got to have my Lions football.
The Miami Dolphins.
I mean, we could go around, and you always talk about how you're not competing against all 31 teams. You're really only competing against 6 or 8. It's because half the league is not that good. Do we really need to have those teams play two more games? No, thanks. Leave it as is.
Lo, do you see a scenario where if they would agree to go to 18 games, the NBA concept of load management could be in? It's such a small amount of games, 18. It still feels as if every game would matter, as they do in the NFL. But do you think all of a sudden, even without the restriction of, well, you can only play 16, maybe teams start taking advantage of load management like the NBA?
I think they will. I think that they'd have guys on pitch counts, especially your elite players, the Khalil Max, the pass rushers. You're like, look, I know you want to play this game, but here, this is a game we're only going to allow you to play this. The Ezekiel Elliott's, that you only have those guys for a certain amount of years. Now you're going, guys going to want more money because they're going to want more service time. So, look, you're going to have to pull those guys back and limit them amount. So I can see it be more of a load management where you could say, okay, players, certain players are going to play least amount of plays, limit their snap count, especially if you're going to play 18 games. Hell, you look at all these things. All of them have these mandatory rule dibs. Hell, which baseball player really plays the whole year? Not really a lot of them. Basketball, we only know it. Less than 2% played the whole year. So a lot of guys already on these mandatory can't play 10, 15 games. You look with Kawhi and a lot of guys did in these other sports before they're for the good of themselves. I think football, I think that the best way, if they're going to do this, I think the coaches now are going to be put, you know, in a tough situation.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.